the difference between making something and not is all, that's all it is. You have to make it, you have to do it. So that's what I would say the big difference is somehow, however it comes to you, whatever age it comes to you, is to galvanise that thing of, I want to do something, therefore I can.
You know, we're looking for something to do, and listening to a record is a beautiful thing. Listening to a record, knowing that there's so many other people listening all over the world as well, it's a powerful thing.
But the reason it will continue is because there is a human requirement to tell stories and to listen to stories. So that will never change.
Twitter feels like the last place you'd want to spend time during lockdown. So many of our friends have left the platform, sick of the endless swamp of Trump and Brexit. But maybe it's not all bad. We're artists and filmmakers Ian Forsyth and Jane Pollard, and this is the third episode of our Somerset House podcast, Coping Mechanisms.
When the coronavirus paralysed the UK, we noticed some of our friends started to organise online activities, ways of spending time together while we're alone.
In fact, we also started talking about a project ourselves. We came up with a name for it, bought a domain name, and then did literally nothing else about it.
So what makes some people act on their ideas? Can we really have a collective experience online? In this episode, we're talking to two people who have been turning Twitter into a positive platform during lockdown.
Karen Morley is a director and screenwriter behind films including Dreams of a Life, The Falling, and most recently, Out of Blue, starring Patricia Clarkson. During lockdown, she's been hosting Friday Film Club. Each week, Carol selects a film that's available in the public domain for free, and after watching the film at the same time, people meet up on Twitter afterwards for a discussion.
Take us right back to the initial spark of the idea for Friday Film Club, and kind of why did you act on it?
A very quick idea. In fact, I'm not sure if it was an idea so much as a tweet. And often tweets aren't preceded by ideas. You know, people just tweet something. We knew we were going into lockdown. I tweeted without really thinking. That's what I mean. It was a bit thoughtless. I tweeted, should I set up a film club? And I got about 500 likes. It got so many likes, I thought, well, I'll have to do it now. So it was really a secondary thought, if that's counted as a real thought. Now, having said that, I have had in me a history of film clubs. So I've run film clubs before. One when I was at St. Martin's, and we did a film club, me and my friend Mark, called The Flea Pit Cinema. And then I ran a film club at home called Pandora's Box, where for 5 years we invited a group of friends around and we watched films directed by women or with women as key components in one way or another. So I did this tweet, should I run a film club? And everyone's like, yes. I started to look for films in the public domain because what I didn't want to do was to have anyone having to go to any pay subscription service. But also I didn't want people to look for films illegally, you know, so I wanted it to be very legal and above board. Really, it was twofold as well. It was one, it was something to do for me that was a bit like going out. And I've actually realised during lockdown, I am a very social creature. I like meeting strangers randomly, just like that idea. But so one, it was for me. And two, I think it was this sense of being able to do something for other people that felt really important within the realm that I knew. You know, not trying to, like, I've not gone on Twitter and tweeted anything about anything other than about film. Originally, when I did it, it started to feel as though we were all inside and it was something where it connected us in time. So it wasn't about let's watch a film and discuss it at some point. It was like, let's watch this film simultaneously as we watch films in the cinema with strangers, with other people, and then discuss it. So it's not a tweet along where you're watching it and you're commenting. It's like really watching it for the duration and then talking about it afterwards. So it approximates a kind of cinema experience, like going, talking about it with your friends afterwards, or overhearing if you're on your own or still with your friends, overhearing what other people are saying about it. So it's an approximation of a cinema experience. And that felt very valuable to give your attention in that way, because I think for everyone involved, that act of watching a film together at Friday at 8, all together, knowing you're watching it with others, it means that you don't just lounge about or fall asleep or pause it or do those like distracted things. You're really actively involved in watching it, knowing you're together. So I felt that was very important. And then as the tweets started to come through, I noticed there were people on their own, that it was really important part of their Friday as we went on. But also there were a few people that tweeted, I'm housebound anyway, you know, outside of lockdown. And this has been like really valuable to me because I never get the opportunity to discuss with other people like this. The other thing is I've been showing, without even trying, been showing lots of films by women who in film are othered anyway, you know, like, because so many films are directed by men or that are shown or are part of the canon are directed by men. So I've noticed some of the kind of guys on Twitter are like, oh my God, I you know, it's made me wonder what is being excluded in, you know, well, women's, not just films by women, but ideas by women, what haven't even been allowed to emerge. And of course you can apply that to very many areas of life, of what we've not been able to see, what somehow has been othered and outside of the norm and therefore not included and not even made. Without trying, because I am just picking stuff in the public domain and that I feel is interesting during these times, it's emerging to be something that is people are getting quite a lot out of beyond their normal circumstances and beyond what they would normally watch. The one rule in my head is not to show really dystopian things. So I've not shown any horror, I've not shown any kind of pessimistic dystopian science fiction. I mean, that is my rule, that I don't want to bring into someone's mind or eyes or ears something that's too disturbing or disturbing at all beyond being playfully disturbing.
It's funny, we've been watching a lot of dystopian kind of delving into areas that we don't normally. Cronenberg
predicted it all. It is Cronenberg. But I feel that for that person living on their own and going to bed afterwards, I couldn't bring into their minds something too dystopian. I think what's really surprised me is how much people have been on Twitter, which is regarded often as something that can get quite nasty and quite moody, if you like, and quite unsisterly, unbrotherly, if you know what I mean. What I've noticed and has surprised me is just how supportive of people have been of the films, of the film club itself and of each other. And that, I've loved that, that it's a very friendly place to be in Friday Film Club. Everybody has played a part in that. And so it's built up this kind of social network that truly isn't about showing off. It feels genuinely inquisitive. And I would have expected a few, you know, like people to emerge that are not going to be supportive of that. But it just hasn't been that way. And so I think that's the biggest surprise, because I always thought maybe there'd be a mean tweet. Even like, why she picked that film? Or why this, why that? Or I hated it. People can say they don't like something. That and people have. There's nothing mean about it. I think I know in the past a lot of people that have left the Twitter sphere because of meanness or, you know, unkindness. So it's been very kind, and that's been my biggest thrill.
Tim Burgess is lead singer in The Charlatans. He's also a writer, DJ, solo artist and record label owner. With live music out of the question for the foreseeable future, he launched an extensive programme of Tim's Twitter listening parties. It's such a simple premise. Fans listen to an album together with Tim, and someone from the band answers questions and shares memories. Tim started branching out into films, and we were thrilled to be invited to present a viewing party for our film about Nick Cave, 20,000 Days on Earth.
A long time ago, like about 10 years ago, I was watching Four Lions. And one of the actors was kind of like, it said, if you watch Four Lions tonight, I'll be tweeting along. You know, you'll see that at this point, when I try and get into the car, it was the fourth take, and it's the one where I'm not laughing as much as I did on takes 1, 2, and 3. And I thought, that's a really good way of sort of like, you know, of interacting with people. And I thought, I'm going to do a listening party for the Charlatans. I asked people on the Charlatans site if they'd be interested in me talking them through Some Friendly by the Charlatans, and everyone said yes. I did 13 albums, and it became a thing, and people really liked it. I've done it about 4 times for each album, just as time, you know, over the past 10 years. And then when it came to, you know, the lockdown and all that kind of thing, I thought I'd do it again. Okay, well, the allotted time all over the world, everybody plays an album at the same time. A key member of the making of that record tweets along as we listen, and that's basically it. I join in because I'm kind of the host, and I'll kind of say, whoa, this song's great, and listen to that bass line. They're getting a direct link to the album and the person or people who were involved in the making of that record as the record is going along. I mean, I think definitely during this pandemic, on the lockdown where most of the world weren't allowed to go out, they just, you know, were looking for something to do, and listening to a record is a beautiful thing. Listening to a record, knowing that there's so many other people listening all over the world as well, it's a powerful thing. And then having someone who made the record telling you about it, it is even more powerful, and it's so simple. And within a week, you know, I had Dave Rowntree, Bonehead, and Wendy Smith from Prefab Sprout, and we had a thing. I didn't ever question it, really.
You have any idea how many you've done now?
It's over 200 since the lockdown. Wow. You know, with the listening party, everyone is saying that they've not listened to an album for the longest time in its entirety. And that's the thing that everybody's saying, of how much, you know, they didn't think they had time before, but now all we've got is time. And they are embracing songs that would be tracks that they'd skip, maybe, and things like that, because they just want to listen through and sort of like share the ups and the downs of the record. And, you know, dare I say it, you know, the path or the journey that the artist wants to take you on. And that's an incredible thing. It's been stripped from lots of artists, you know, over the years. And it's nice to hear people say that. I'm not saying I'm bringing it back, but it's, you know, but it's been mentioned a lot, and it's a nice thing to hear. You can really feel it. You can't explain it, but you can feel it. Everyone who's taken part wants to do another one. Everyone who's taken part has said how emotional it was. Everyone who's like taken part has like reconnected with band members that they'd fallen out with before. You know, it's been a real thing. I am missing live, but I'm actually missing the connection with people. I'm missing meeting people in a coffee shop and sort of like saying, "Hey, how are you doing?" and sort of like, you know, giving my friends a hug. That's what I'm missing more than anything, really, because I like the connectivity of that.
We Friday Film Club, a lot of them that I show I haven't seen, and I like that. It's just like I watch with everyone else. People are seeing it within the context of the times. So any film I've shown, in a way, people are almost rationalising it, or certainly reading in, like you would read a film historically anyway. They're reading in historically to that film where they are now. So I showed Meet John Doe, the Capra film, and people really read in to that film their own situations. Because it's definitely, that film is definitely questioning, say, the popular press and stuff like that, the newspapers. So, yeah, I've noticed people aligning where they are during lockdown with what we're showing. And through it, it is, people are emerging. So people maybe will go, "I really needed that. I felt quite lonely." Or it emerges that somebody as part of Friday Film Club has been working all the way through as a key worker, and they really look forward to it on a Friday with their glass of wine. I believe that optimism is a political act. And I think that optimism, which is where your sort of question began, optimism is about believing in a future that's going to be better. Optimism is about looking at our world and seeing beyond the visible and seeing the hope and the light within it. And I think culture and art, making it and why people go and see it, it embraces that. Because even if, you know, for example, using the idea of dystopian again, even if you see something dystopian, it's incredibly cathartic. It helps us to see the light. You know, it helps us move through our own darkness and to engage with our darkness and to grapple with it. Anything that's considered a work of art is enabling us as human beings to see the light and to feel that there's something beyond the everyday. The everyday is, of course, crucial to all of us and how we navigate it. But if you are in a position, for instance, where you are, let's think now, a key worker, you need to engage with something beyond the everyday. We all do. And whether that be having a drink and getting drunk and getting off our heads, or whether it be looking at a piece of art, a film, or a theatre production, or a painting, and somehow transcending our everydayness, I think it's really, really important. But the reason it will continue is because there is a human requirement to tell stories and to listen to stories. So that will never change.
It reminds me of sort of like being in a bedroom with my friend and sort of putting a record on and having a shared experience with somebody, you know, who likes this band as much as you do. And, you know, records and, you know, records are a very youthful thing, I think. But everyone has brought their own thing to it. None of them have been the same. And that's what makes it so amazing. Every artist and every listening party, they've all been completely different. You know, the first big one for me was Wendy Smith and Prefab Sprout, because I know Wendy and we've sang together. So, you know, I think she's fantastic. So it was Charlatans, Franz Ferdinand, Blur, and then Prefab Sprout. And I thought that Wendy kind of just really kind of hit the emotional button, and it just like completely changed everything for me of what was happening, you know. And I think everyone felt it.
I've got six things on my mind. You're no longer one of them. I've got six things on my mind.
I felt not that different from my normal life when the lockdown first started, because I'm kind of used to being on tour buses and kind of backstage and things like that, and on my own, and, you know, writing on my own. I get something to focus on, and I need that for my health, you know. I need to be busy, I need to be doing something, I need to feel like I'm doing something of worth. And I'm getting a lot of comfort out of it too. You know, people are kind of like seeing opportunities for the listening party that I hadn't thought of, and people keep writing to me all the time, which is fantastic, and, you know, long may it continue. But there is something happening. I got emotional listening to Spandau Ballet. You know, they weren't really on my radar when I was younger, although a couple of singles stood out, Communication and To Cut a Long Story Short. You know, I like those songs. But then kind of, you know, got very into like Factory Records and was probably more into a certain ratio or something like that at the time. But listening to it, every song was like a humdinger, you know.
Head over heels, went toe-to-toe. This is the sound of my soul. This is the sound. I want to take it to the world.
It's interesting that putting those songs, those crazy massive hits, back into the context in which they were created,
yeah,
the album.
Yeah.
You know, back into the kind of form that the artist
chose them to be. An 8-track album. He was 23 when he wrote them at his mum's house, you know, in London, and his brother was his only critic or fan, or, you know, or member of the audience. And it was just like, you know, what do you think of these songs? Oh, yeah, I think it's pretty good. You know, okay, let's do this one. It's like, true, you know, it's like, okay. And, so 23 and 20, 21, and it's just like, hearing all that, and listening, it's just, it's bigger than genre, isn't it? It's bigger than my taste. It quickly turned into three a day and five a day at the weekends. You know, people are turning up and listening to something for the first time and then saying things like, I'm going to get this record tomorrow. Yeah, thanks for turning me on to this, Tim, and things like that. And that's kind of quite rewarding. And then, you know, like 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock, you get Spandau Ballet or. Music was everything. It was all I had. You know, I found out very early on that I liked I liked music more than anybody else. And I liked it more than anything else. And I kind of like, it was almost like a desperation in a way that's all I could really do. And I know that I share that. The music was all I had, really, in a way. And that sounds kind of, I'm sure I could have done something else. I was quite happy doing, I worked as a labourer and I worked in an office. And I was quite happy doing that because, I just listened to my Walkman all day long. And I was quite happy-go-lucky, but there was something inside that made me really want to seek out every possibility of doing music. I don't know it. I bet that Jarvis had the same thing, and I bet Noel Fielding had the same thing. But you know, with music and comedy, and him, you know, he's like, yeah, I would presume that our class was the same as well.
You know, the other day I went into a shop and it's probably, you know, the woman serving me was behind this big plastic screen shield, you know, but our hands touched momentarily and I got this absolute thrill from this contact with a stranger, and it made me really sad that thing that we haven't noticed for a long time, those little touches, brushing someone as we pass them and all that, actually means something, because it means that we're connected. I think all that kind of group activity within our homes, but knowing there was a wider commitment, meant a lot and means that it still means a lot. I think the collective is what we never want to destroy, you know. It's very meaningful. It's very meaningful. It's a political act with a big P, with a small P. The collective is crucial. Actually, when I saw a film back in the day, even in my 20s, I thought it took about twice as long to make it as it was to watch it. I mean, I had no concept of any of that. So I wasn't sort of part of any world where I thought I could become a director. Ever since I've sort of made inroads into that world, I thought, well, if I can do that, anything's possible now, you know? So I think that I do act on my ideas and I don't dismiss them. And I think in the past, as a working class girl from up north, and if it was about music, you could believe you could do it because everyone around you, the people that you saw were in bands. So you thought, I can do that. But I felt like, what was the difference between me doing something and not doing something? And it was really about that belief. And I think if you're from a certain background, you might have that belief for whatever reason. It might be a class thing, or it just might be the way being brought up. But I think for me, it's definitely about, I've begun to have this self-belief that actually I deserve, or I don't not deserve to have a space, so I'm going to take the space. If I see a space, I'll take it. And I think it was a bit like that tweet. It wasn't like a lot of pre-thought of like, can I do this? What will it be like? Will I get it wrong? Oh my God. But it was just like, the space is there. Let's try it. And I think that's sort of the growing up. It's getting older as well. It's gaining that confidence. It's seeing that things can happen. They'll only happen if you do it. I certainly feel that when I was at art school, the people that had the better time were people that were a bit older, that hadn't gone there straight from school, that knew how the real world was, you know what I mean? Like there wasn't like opportunities at every turning that were going to turn your dreams into reality necessarily. I feel there's a certain empowerment to it and a power to it. And I think that to do an ongoing regular thing without much ado You know, you're not like taking an advert out in paper or having to hire a venue or, you know, having to hire the films. It really is a kind of exploration of what exists in that cloud out there. There's a great site called internetarchive.org, which I've been inhabiting quite a lot. And it's got so many great things that are available to us there that are just incredible. So I've been empowered by the goodness out there, I think. What's good in people, what's widely available and accessible to us. And there is an importance to those moments of connection. So with Friday Film Club, it's empowered me to think about so many things, about obviously the ideas of the film, but also connecting to a commercial market for a film because it costs so much money to make it. Whereas this has been beautiful because in a way it was so simple, and it was like me connecting to an audience without even having to make anything. So it felt like this weird relief that I could still engage with ideas and with energy and with possibility with people without having to put my own like things that I'd made in front of them. So I feel like it's making something together. And we've watched films from 70, 80 years ago that have fundamentally survived, i.e. the ideas are still totally current and they're totally like viable. And that makes me feel good about making work, because our work will transcend us, you know? It's sort of beyond that. It's like, it will enter the world, and that has made me very, very happy.
But I think one of the things that's really surprised me and satisfied me during lockdown is how much the arts have been able to give back. You know, whatever it is, there's something creative that is helping people get through.
You know, people in times of trouble turn to artists, don't they? It's kind of like, you know, when all is lost, turn to the artist.
Like they're going to know what to do.
The difference between making something and not is all, that's all it is. You have to make it, you have to do it. So that's what I would say the big difference is somehow, however it comes to you, whatever age it comes to you, is to galvanise that thing of, I want to do something, therefore I can.
Coping Mechanisms is a Somerset House podcast, created by Ian Forsyth and Jane Pollard, produced by Eleanor Scott and Daniel Brewer. Music by Bernholtz. Thank you to all the artists who have contributed to the series.
To listen to more and to subscribe to the Somerset House podcast, search Somerset House on your favourite podcast app.